हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 22, chapter 74. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, because there is little difference between the associate and the Lord, or to indicate that the body was eternity, knowledge, and bliss, the words tan, maya, tam, becoming one with, are used. So pointing out that, that's not meaning the sayujas, that's the aspect of his associate. And that, or that the body is eternity, knowledge, and bliss. That's the common point that's being made there. Or meditating on the Lord, he attained a similar nature. Since he meditated with hatred, he should not become an associate again. This was because his previous bhakti as an associate was the cause of the best result, being an associate. By the will of the Lord, by the curse of the Brahmins, there was an imitation of hatred, but actually he meditated as a devotee. Right, so in case someone says, no, but he meditated with hatred, therefore he couldn't become an associate. But it's because of, he had that position already by his devotion to the Lord. And so then again, it's just reattaining that same position. So he says, and we see here is that he meditated as a devotee, not actually, he used the medium of hatred because that was the point they're supposed to fight. So that's the way it works.
These associates of the Lord, when they are acting in a negative way, because they have been covered by the yoga maya, that is because they are exhibiting something.
Is that because they're covered by the yoga maya? It means it's Krishna's arrangement, it's a pastime, so yoga maya is involved. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's basically what's going on. Mm-hmm. Verses 47 to 54, Krishna returns to Dwarka.
They fought with the Lord. This one, it didn't appear like much of a fight. It just fell off his hand.
No, but the thing is he's arguing and this and that, so he's an enemy.
So it's a verbal fight.
Yeah, and this one. Okay. So then that's also, you know, you know, has its own taste. Because of the situation and how he's supposed to reconcile. That means if everybody kills, then it'll mess up the yajna.
Right?
So then only he can kill, but he still has to kill him in such a way that he doesn't pollute the assembly. Because blood is impure, so how can he kill him without spilling any blood? So, you know, it has to be done really nicely. Yes.
It's an original kosher formula.
Original?
Kosher.
Yes. But this is, instead of all the blood out, all the blood in. Like that, see. Yeah.
How many offenses did Shishupal arise?
His mother asked Krishna, means because Shishupal's mother is his
aunt.
Yeah, I get stuck and we say aunt. You just get there and my brain freezes because they have both and they won't get it. So, have to surrender his aunt. Okay, so then she asked that he tolerate 100 insults. So before this point, it never got to 100. So it never had a problem. He might say 3 or 4 or 10 or even 20, but like that. But it never gets to 100. So he tolerates up to 100. But if it's 101, then. No, it wasn't accumulated like that. Because in the Vedic system, you don't have interest, is not accumulated. Yeah. I mean, it's some set of, from what I understand from the Upakhyans, it describes that when this is there, because he was being worshipped, they just finished the worship because he wanted to wait till the worship was finished and then point out how they were all idiots for doing this. So that was the ruination of their yajna, so they couldn't continue. Because his idea, he'll point out how he's not the worshipable, therefore the yajna's worship ruined because you worship the wrong person. So all the things would be there. So now one of the things to offer is betel nuts. So then he has a pile of betel nuts. So it said that he sat there and, you know, each insult just moved one betel nut, you know, until it was 100. And then with 100, then he just stood up and killed them. You know, 101. 100, then he was cool. That's why everyone's there and he's cool like that. But then when it hits 101, then he, you know. But that's Upakhyan, so Bhagavatam doesn't mention that. I'm not sure how much detail Mahabharat mentions. It'll give more detail than this. Upakhyans. They're another set of, like you have, the Purana gives the history of all the kings. And Itihas gives the history of one king. Upakhyan gives details of a particular incident. Like that. So.
And there are a lot of them?
There's 90 of them. Yeah.
Are they many of them translated in English?
I would highly doubt it. Like that. Who wants? People have enough trouble with, you know, the Bhagavatam detail, you know. Let alone, you know. Yeah.
I've heard that every time is to come and commit 99 offenses and run away.
Oh, it means because he knew it was 100.
He knew this number.
Okay, so but this time he got carried away.
Because of the grandness and like too much of praise of Krishna, I just lost control.
And so he went over his quota. Really, he'd go up to 99. That is so...
As if he's moving the betel nuts and he's counting.
Sorry?
As if he's moving the betel nuts and counting in the head.
Yeah. That's a real annoying cousin, right? You know, because, yeah, there's annoying, you know, younger brothers. They just come and harass just because they can. And because they're younger, then they can get away with it. So as soon as then, you know, it gets all that, then he'll complain that he's bothering me, and then the parent will get on the bigger one's case. Yeah, so. Yes. Okay, Sukadeva Goswami continued. Emperor Yudhishthira gave generous gifts to the sacrificial priests and members of the assembly, properly honoring them all in the manner prescribed by the Vedas. So that means each one, so he wasn't taking any shortcuts. So things go at a slower pace, and, you know, everybody can appreciate they have the qualities to do that. He then took the Avabrita bath. Thus, okay, so Avabrita means that the end of the ceremony, then the Yajaman and his family members and the priests, then they all take a bath with their clothes on. It means whatever they're wearing for the assembly, they take a bath at that time. So it's not a bath as far as cleanliness goes, it's just a bath as the finality of the... That's why it says that it's an offense to, after a ritual like this, to take a bath. And then we'll say, well, what about the Avabrita? Because why do you take a bath? Because you're dirty. So if you consider you're dirty at this point, and that's why you're taking the bath, it's an offense. But it's just part of the ritual. That's why with all your clothes on and everything. And then whatever you're wearing, you generally they'll give it away in charity and everything like that. So that means all your ornaments, this, that. So you want to dress up for the program, fine, but just understand you're giving it all away.
Thanks for explaining that, because just yesterday I saw somebody walking into the bungalow with all their clothes on.
As you wonder why are they doing that. Maybe yeah. It's also that certain prayaschittas, like if you see a Mayavadi, you're supposed to take a bath with your clothes on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you wouldn't want your clothes are contaminated. You want to take a bath and then touch them again. You take a bath with all your clothes on. So you do have, it's a general thing.
Some devotees mentioned that after Jagya, actually, we shouldn't take baths as long as possible, because after the Jagya, you're supposed to be purified. So.
No, but that's why the Avabrita Snan is there. So there is a bath, but there isn't a bath. Because it's part of the ritual. But what they're avoiding is taking a bath because they're dirty. But then it means you wouldn't avoid as long as possible. You could avoid until the next time when you're scheduled to take a bath. Like, let's say that happened in the morning, so then you take your noon bath, or it was the middle of the day, so you take your evening bath, or it was evening, so then you take your next morning bath. Mm-hmm. That would be there. But this is that you're not taking a bath to purify yourself because you're dirty from the yajna. Because, you know, from the yajna, so, you know, smoke, this, that, so many different things. So therefore, the avabrita, you're taking a bath, but you're not taking a bath. You know, like that, because it's part of the ritual. So then if you want to, you know, that bath needs to be taken, you know, it means like that, the avabrita is the thing. So then you're getting both done. But you have to be looking at it as part of the ritual, not that I'm cleansing myself.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, you still change clothes and everything like that. So it's not that you just don't, you know, get out your soap.
There are
two
rituals.
Sorry?
There are rituals. Rituals wherein in Masik, Peshawar Tirithal, wherein we need to perform the ritual, the yajna and everything, and then go in the Peshawar and take a dip. That's it. And then donate whatever clothes you are wearing.
Yeah.
The same part. It's a part of it.
It's the standard
yeah.
thing. Is that afterwards you can do it. We don't do because we just it's enough that we can just get by the basic, you know, ritual that we're good. Like that. Because just people, they don't have the attention span, you know, don't have the focus, don't have. So how you say? Yeah, there's no places to dip also, yeah, that's also there. Because always these to be done at holy places, so then you always have a place to take a dip, yeah. So yeah, that's true. So yeah, everybody, all the priests of that, all in the bathtub. Yeah, that's true, it's a good point. No place to dip. You know. Go to the sign or something. Huh? Right. No, definitely. Isn't it? That's the river that goes through Paris?
Same.
Yeah, okay. Go and take a bath there. In London, in the Thames. You know, so. Okay. Sorry?
Dead Sea.
Dead Sea, yeah, yeah. Well, if you were wearing all your clothes, you really wouldn't go into the water, right? Okay, yeah, yeah. Thus, Sri Krishna, the Lord of all masters of mystic yoga, saw to the successful execution of this great sacrifice on behalf of King Yudhishthira. Right? So they did everything properly, did all the rituals and all that. So it's not that they left anything because they're devotees or that. But it's all being done simply because it pleases Krishna. Right? Krishna is trying to please the devotees are trying to please Krishna. That's the whole purpose. It's just a medium. Afterwards, the Lord stayed with his intimate friends for a few months at their earnest request. Footnote 8. Krishna is the Lord of all lords of yoga, such as Shiva, Yogeshwara, Yogeshwareshwara. Out of great love for Yudhishthira, however, he became the servant and carried out the desires of Yudhishthira. He personally bore all the burdens for the sacrifice. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Then the Lord, the son of Devaki, took the reluctant position, permission of the king, and returned to his capital with his wives and ministers. Because right? Reluctant, because he would like to stay forever with his devotees, but he also has his devotees in Dwarka, so that's the thing. Footnote 9. Although he was supremely independent, Ishvara, he took permission to leave. He went with palanquins for the convenience of his mother, father, and others. From Srila Jiva Goswami. So, yeah, he's independent, he can do what he likes, but he still takes permission, because that's where the taste is interacting with the devotees. Srila Prabhupada adds, although King Yudhishthira and his brothers were unwilling to have Lord Krishna leave Hastinapur, Krishna arranged to take permission from the king to return to Dwarka, and thus he returned home along with his queens and ministers, right? Because they wouldn't want him to go, but if he takes permission, then they naturally will have to give. You know, so it's just, yes.
So when this tradition comes, then the superior, he asks the junior person for him to leave. How is that? It's a bit awkward.
I don't understand the context.
You know, like a senior person, he asks the junior person if he can leave, actually. So why?
But I mean, in the context that they've come for a festival or something, and then
a festival, or they ask your permission to come, which has nothing to do. You know, it's like it's a cultural thing. I understand. But what is?
Where is he asked the senior asked to leave? Asks the junior to leave?
Yeah.
Or the senior is asking the junior if he can leave. I'm not sure which one.
If he can go away.
Means the senior is asking the junior.
Yeah.
That's because the junior means, let us say, for this, he's been invited to the program.
Yeah.
So that means they've come for some service and other things like that to take part. And so if all the different activities that they've been invited for are concluded, then that means now they can go. So they're just checking if there's anything more left to do. You know, just it's just part of the, that's just the etiquette. That it doesn't mean that because they're asking, then the other person, he has the control. No, all etiquette stays in place. So then, unless there is something else they were supposed to do, then, you know, like that. So, that, you know, so it all has to be considered. Yes?
So usually, for example, for prasadam, before leaving prasadam, you need to ask the senior one. You need to wait the senior leave the prasadam.
The senior to leave the prasadam.
Means when you finish prasadam, it is up to the senior to get up first.
Yes, we don't ask him to leave. Unless there's some big arrangement or program, he's sitting there not sure what it is, so then you say, yeah, we can go wash now, and like that.
And we are supposed to ask permission to leave in front of the senior.
Means and there's someone senior,
yes,
and we need to leave. Yes, then we'd ask.
Yes.
Like that. So it's just a matter of, so the etiquette, it means the relationships are being maintained, because let us say it's you're serving the senior prasad and there's no other kind of programs or anything, and they're talking, you know, the prasad, they're talking and prasad ends and they talk for half an hour. And then they go and wash and that, so it doesn't have any effect on anything. Okay? So that's not a problem. Now you'll find situations where if they sit and talk, then others who should be taking prashad can't take prashad. Then you might, you know, end it earlier. Oh, we need to go wash now, or others need to take prashad. And like say they have a schedule or something like that. Or does that make sense? So that kind of thing is there. Mm-hmm. You know, and ourselves, because we're there with them, they're the senior, we can't just leave and go do what we want, because then we've just come for prashad. What about the association?
We're reading here that Krishna leaves and goes back to Dwarka. So, but he stays, just like with the gopis, he stays in his form. Is that called Anubhava?
That's the, what do you call it? Bhava Rupa. Means he's there in their remembrance of him. He's there. And because he is you know, everything and in everything, therefore, then through anything that they're dealing with, they can remember him. But it's still going to be a feeling of separation.
And that's normally how, because we see, of course, he's supremely independent, and we have 16,000 wives in Dwarka, but he's separated himself physically from those devotees. But they're really, he doesn't do that otherwise. But,
the point is being with or not with, it's just, it's all you're always with, but one nourishes the other. Because being with him all the time, then it has a particular flavor, but you can nourish that more by that feeling of separation. So technically one is never separated, but it has that feeling because the original form is not there.
And then the intensity of flavor.
Yes, increases, yes. I have already described to you in detail the history of the two residents of Vaikuntha who had to undergo repeated births in the material world because of being cursed by Brahmanas. Purified in the final Abhavritya ritual, which marked the successful completion of the Rajasuya sacrifice, King Yudhishthira shone amongst the assembled Brahmanas and Kshatriyas like the king of the demigods himself. The demigods, humans, residents of the intermediate heavens, all properly honored by the king, happily set off for their respective domains while singing the praises of Lord Krishna and the great sacrifice. Right, so here he's been describing the, how the sacrifice is unfolding. Then he says the Avabrita, then Krishna, at the request of the Pandavas, stayed, and then, asking their permission, he left. Right? And then he goes back and shows how everybody else leaves. So, Yudhisthira Maharaj dunning the Avabrita, and then having all that glorious position and all that, then all the demigods are satisfied, then seeing them all off, and they all left. So we saw Krishna's leaving first, then them. Because otherwise one may say, oh, it's not in chronological order. You can put it in chronology, but chronology, the taste in chronology is actually overrated. It's more of what's going to be, give the proper tastes and feelings there from the description of whatever it is you're doing. Right? Chronology is a general standard thing unless something takes precedence. Like a point will take precedence because a point of interest or to bring something forward, you know, as an understanding or an experience and all that, then order of things may be adjusted. Like that. It's not that you're not telling the facts, it's just a matter of you're going through. So here he's repeating the facts. But the one is showing how Krishna stayed by being with the devotees and left like that, and the etiquette between him and the Yudhisthira. And the other shows the glory of Yudhisthira and his position and the demigods, and then like this, and after everyone's taken care of, then they all go back to their respective places. You understand? So one's intimate and one's formal. Mm-hmm. So he describes them both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. About this intimate. Can we say that, for example, Srila Prabhupada wrote the Second Chance is a separate book about Arjuna? Can it be called like that? Because it's about this incident.
Well, yes, but you'd have to see as if it would be... Yeah, but it's more like that, because then it's getting in, you see as what's being added is not necessarily more facts. What's being added is an understanding of what's going on, like the prayers of Queen Kunti. It's not that he adds in more prayers, he just explains them. So that would be more like a commentary on them, but done in a book form. Yes, teaching like this. So it's just a matter of expanding on, like Krishna book, he just explains as he goes. Mm-hmm. Like that. Upakyan, what we're saying is just there's more detail of the discussion, down to actual words and things like that. You could say, yeah, that's kind of like that Upakyan kind of thing. It's just giving more detail to what's on it. Okay. All were satisfied except sinful Duryodhana, the personification of the age of quarrel, and the disease of the Kuru dynasty. Nicely spoken. He could not bear to see the flourishing opulence of the son of Pandu, one who recites these activities of Lord Vishnu, including the killing of Shishupal, the deliverance of the kings, and the performance of the Rajasuya sacrifice, is free from all sins. Right, so everybody was freed except Duryodhana, because it is just enmity. But if we're reciting this, you know, with that proper attitude, then we are free like that. He just becomes more sinful. Conclusion. Out of love, the devotee wants to glorify the Lord, and out of love, the Lord becomes an obedient servant of his devotee's desire. Right? So that's the relationship. The devotee wants to please the Lord wants to please the devotees. Maharaj Yudhisthira wanted to broadcast the glory of Lord Krishna by performing a Rajasuya sacrifice. Although, because if he just does a smaller sacrifice, not everybody's going to be there. But if he does Rajasuya, which he can do, it's not an over-endeavor for him. Right? We never see at any point described that it was a difficulty and he was in anxiety and all this management, how to arrange this. No, it was just like a regular program for him. It's not out of the context of his ability. So by doing the Rajasuya, now all the kings will be there and all the demigods will be there. And at that place, now you broadcast Krishna's glories. Now that's some serious, you know, how you say, yeah, that's some serious preaching. That's the... Although supremely independent, out of great love for Yudhishthira, Krishna became his servant. Right? Because by his coming, he is a cousin that will take part. Right? And he's a junior cousin, because he's the age of Arjuna. So that puts him in a junior position. He carried out his desire, personally bore all the burdens for the sacrifice, and removed all obstacles for its successful end. So he's taking care of all this. Devotees are doing their positions, but whatever the obstacles, Krishna's removing them. And he's taking that responsibility. It's not that, why we say he's taking responsibility is that, do we hear that anyone ran into problem and then went to Krishna? No, so already any problems that come up, he's already removed them. So he's taken that responsibility because of his devotion to Yudhishthira. You know, it's only Shishupal, then he takes care of himself there directly, but that's just come up at that point. You know, but that's part of the process of showing his position. But anything that there is with Nakula, Sahadev, Arjuna, you know, Bhima, any of the duties that they're doing, any obstacles that would naturally come up, then any of those have been removed by Krishna, so then it all went very smoothly. So that's why I say he personally bore all the burdens for the sacrifice and removed all obstacles for its successful end. Maharaj Yudhishthira expressed his amazement. Actually, we are fit to be punished by you, but the wonder is that instead of punishing us, you so kindly and mercifully accepted our orders and carried them out properly. Right? So it's another thing, is he's independent. He takes the order, but he doesn't do it properly because he's independent. No, he actually just did it very properly to please. So that's the thing, is doing things because it pleases. That's the whole point of, we may say, what are the rules and regulations for? But that's how, by following those, that's how you express that devotion. Right? That's the whole point. So we may say, we don't need the rules, but then what are you going to use to express the devotion? Right? Because then what are you left with? If I don't follow rules and I want to express something, then it has to be the whim of my mind, whatever I feel like at the time. It's not necessarily what the other person feels like. You can say, no, but it's about Krishna, but it's about what I think I want to do for Krishna at this time. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, you know, we're having a formal program and I suddenly decide to stand up in the middle of it and sing a nice bhajan for Krishna. You know? Right. So is it about Krishna? Because now a formal program is going on. Does that make sense? Yeah? Is it?
Yeah, I'm thinking that sometimes we see often with Krishna and with the devotees as well, once the relationship is established, then, you know, some flow is just overlooked by Krishna or by devotees because it's not considered, you know, like very important.
No, that's there. But the principle of it will always remain. But what I mean, like the example I gave there, the principle that this is a formal occasion and all these devotees are interacting with Krishna, and that our interacting with Krishna by standing up and singing a song, it's going to get in the way of all these, and it's not necessarily that's the flavor that's going on. It won't be the best thing. You know, but what we're talking about here is that, you know, you should come in and offer the seat and then, you know, do all the things, but they come in and just sit there and talk and they're so excited and forgot about offering the seat, but it works because the mood is there. Then after that mood kind of like, you know, is pacified, then you're so please come and sit and my foolish eye is talking too much, come and sit. And so there was the higher rules are being followed and the effect of those rules are being followed, so the juniors aren't, but that's only because of the natural force of the devotion at the time, because of the effect of the Anubhavas. But when that effect recedes a bit, then you go back to the normal passage of the pastime. Does that make sense? Otherwise, then when it recedes, what do you go back to? Because the form, it's within the form is where all the vibhavas come up, right? Because there you as the servant, he is as the enjoyer, then you can express that, and then you have all the udipans that come up in according to that situation. So that will then generate the anubhavas. Now if the anubhava is so strong, then that's the whole point is there, is the taste between Krishna and the devotees. Then you've attained that. So all it is that's the effect of something that's before. It may get stretched out longer or take precedent over other things. You know, but the point is that going is there. That's one thing I've noticed in someone who's, like, let's say, in kirtan, is very expert. Is now, let us say, the kirtan is, you know, going just regularly, and you have a schedule, they'll stick to the schedule very exactly. But then sometimes the kirtan, it becomes very ecstatic, and they'll go over for some time. Now you could say, you know, if you're organizing the program, then, you know, they get bent out of shape, you know, like that. But the point is if they had stopped then, that happiness the devotees were experienced in the kirtan wouldn't have been gained. Because you can think, oh, I can work this into the formality later, but it doesn't happen. Like that. So I've seen those who are very expert in functioning these kind of, you know, these festive environments, know when they can extend, like they can extend the class or something. You know, the class is supposed to end at 9 o'clock and they talk until 12, so instead of having breakfast, they had lunch. And nobody's complaining. But then someone else tries it, it's kind of like they're telling them, hey, it's time for breakfast. So in other words, the experience was so prominent that the rules you forget. But if it's just I break rules because I can break rules, it's just, you know, I'm doing something or, you know, like that, it's my independence, and then that's that, you don't do that. Does that make sense? So that's why there's, you know, things like you eat, and then when you eat you go and wash. But then sometimes the mood is so nice people sit there and talk. I can remember some programs, you know, let's say like a Chiradoya Utsav, where you sit there and talk for hours. Like that. So you're talking and all the, you know, everybody else has eaten, the servers have eaten, they've even practically cleaned up, you know. And so there'll be a few people talking, and then depending on what's doing, they have some other service, they'll leave, but then they'll come back and then sit, and then they have something else. So the other devotees keep coming and going while these, you know, devotees are still sitting there. So, yeah. So it's a matter of what's the purpose is to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness, so whatever enhances that, then it works. But you have to be careful is that what you're doing also doesn't set that people, it shouldn't be taken that that's a standard. You know what I'm saying? Like I remember once the kirtaniers went along and they got into this old song, you know, Bande Krishna Nanda Kumara?
Yeah.
Like that. Basically nowadays hardly anyone sings it, but back in the 70s it was you sung a lot. And I remember, can't remember where we were, but the program is supposed to be this kind of shorter program. May have even been a morning program, I'm not sure, but the kirtan, you know, went, and then they sung that song for 2 hours. Because the devotees involved, you know, they used to sing the song. It was so nice singing with each other. You know, they were good friends, and, you know, the song was like an old friend, and they went on and sing it in so many different ways because they were both very good at kirtan, so they could make that variety. And they went for 2 hours. And I'm not sure if that was after or before, then the class also went on for like 3 hours. You know, it was a pastime of Lord Chaitanya, and they just got right. It just, you know, it was... And so those kind of things you'll remember and talk about, remember that festival and that. But then, you know, when you have these, you know, guys that just keep going on and don't take a hint, and everyone leaves, so it's just them and one or two others, you know. And then people also talk about that festival, but not necessarily in a positive way. So the rules are there to ensure the taste. That's the whole point, is that it's about taste. But it's taste that comes from absorption in Krishna. Does that make sense? So, therefore, even if we're not getting the taste, then we do. And it's just like Prabhupada told Gargamuni, is that he didn't feel like offering a basin. He says, no, you keep doing it, and then you'll get the feeling to offer. So in the same way as we follow the rules. So therefore, you know, we have the kirtans this long, because it's just, at least that's the minimum, that we're exposed, and then that's done on a regular basis, we start to get a taste. But Lord Nityananda and his associates who do a kirtan straight for 72 hours wouldn't stop. They're not stopping. You don't hear they're stopping to go to the bathroom, stopping for eating, stopping for drinking, stopping for sleeping. No, it's just 72 hours in ecstasy. They just go. And because within they're performing human pastimes, And because within the material world, then 72 hours is the maximum that you see that the demigods, you know, can go. Like the you know, Vidyadharas, Charanas, and Gandharvas, that they can do kirtan and music for 72 hours straight. That's one of their qualifications. So they stop at 72. They can keep going, but otherwise, then it goes beyond the context of the human pastimes, right? And then, but it's not that then they go and sit and take prasad, and then the ecstasy mm-hmm. there of taking prasad, and then talking about pastimes and. You know, so it doesn't matter. It's just you have all these forms that create the variety, and that way then it just turns over. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of you have forms that are there and the varieties that are there. It just gives, it's all it is the udipan for interaction with the Lord. Does that make sense? So that's why the elements of Vaidhi aren't a problem. And so when we say we drop, we only drop if something higher is being functioning at the time. You know what I'm saying? And so like that, let us say, now's the time for your homework and you're supposed to be doing that, but then just suddenly, you know, some special guest comes. You know, so then you stop your homework and you listen and talk and this and that, and then they go and then you go back to your homework. Even though that's the homework time. But if someone doesn't just show up, you don't then, you know, go on to Facebook and that, well, hey, he showed up, you know, like that. Very important person in my, you know, friends list here. You know, no, you don't do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's a very fine, if to be able to appreciate how the culture and the culture and the philosophy, how they match together, and that whole process is being used for devotion. Is that?
Spontaneous ecstasies of the Paramahamsa should not be made into paddhati by the Kanishthas.
Yes, because I've seen that sometimes you have a nice kirtan, and in those kirtan, like saying that song or something, they got off into something, and then they get into it, and it was really ecstatic. But then some, you know, the brahmacharis think, oh, the kirtan was ecstatic because they were doing that kirtan. And so then they try doing that and trying to make it into a thing and go on forever with it when they shouldn't. And then, you know, the GBC ends up banning it because they're misapplying it. So it's not that it's coming out of the ecstasy, and that they're coming because they think it's a technique. And so then it doesn't work.
Cat in the basket.
Huh? Yes, the cat in the basket. They think it's that, but it's not that. It's not what they did. It's that they were ecstatic, therefore it worked. But if you think it's, no, this is what you have to do, then it doesn't work. Like I remember once it was, I don't know, do you remember that one? It was Guru Kripa Jashodananda were having a kirtan in the temple from Radha Madhava. And everyone's, you know, the brahmacharis are all there in that huddle, right, you know? And Janani Vasprabhu was there. And the mean swamis, and now, you know, they point out somebody and they come into the middle and have to do a dance, and everyone's got, you know, they got to really make a show of it, you know, it's like really, really high energy and, or fancy techniques or something, you know, it's all happening. And then at one point after, you know, all the main wallahs had done their bit, then, I think Guru Kripa pointed at, Janani Vas. You know, and, you know, he's simple and like this and that. And then, you know, pointing in there is because it's in one sense, the idea is going to be some fun because he's not going to be able to dance and do the stuff that the, you know, the Namhata boys can do. So, you know. But then when he starts, he comes in and dances in this simple way, but just as Lord Chaitanya, you know, just as irons and the mood and all that, it was interesting. All Guru Kripa, they're all shocked and, you know, a nice, it's just about the devotion, they're just mesmerized by his dancing like that. You remember that one? Yeah. And then after that, they didn't bother him anymore. They didn't think, you know, we're the guys, you know, like that. They just, you know, they just respected him because it was that, they could see us. It was just a natural, spontaneous devotion was there. So they just, okay, you know. And so you come to the kirtan if you wanted to dance, but it wasn't one of these kind of, you know, kind of things. Like that. So it's far. Sorry? Yes. But he's here. Yes. Thanks. Yudhishthira expressed, Maharaj Yudhishthira was qualified to receive Krishna's mercy by dint of his pure devotion, not by his material skills. Right? So it's not that he organized this fabulous Rajasuya and everything was perfect. It's because of his devotion that you get the mercy. We see there's a pattern here going on in the Bhagavatam. It's not logic, it's not your material skills, it's not your knowledge, it's not your piety. Does that make sense? It's your devotion. Now, all these are used, just like he used Rajasuya. You don't get more of a religious function than that. That's like, you're not going to get more. When it comes down to, you know, the karmakanda details, you're not going to get a bigger one than that. But it's just a devotion to the Lord. So that's the... All the respectable sages, kings, and demigods who assembled at the sacrifice agreed unanimously that King Yudhishthira was quite competent to take the responsibility of performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, because he had the material ability, but the main point was that he had the devotional attitude. So it's going to be perfect. So it's even going to be better than any other Rajasuya that's been done before. Right? Because others are done because of their position and qualification, and that's the appropriate thing to do. Like Varuna's doing it because it's appropriate. And he, as a demigod, is doing it perfectly. But Yudhishthira is doing it because of devotion. So that's why then it comes in the Bhagavatam. So they accept that he has the responsibility because he was a great devotee of Lord Krishna. No accomplishment was extraordinary for him. So even though it's such a great thing that generally we see only demigods are doing, he can do it because he's a devotee. His desire completely fulfilled, King Yudhishthira felt such ecstasy by honoring Krishna, his only lovable object, that tears glided down from his eyes. Right? He's a king. They're not worried. Because if you laugh, then, you know, it only takes unsheathing your sword, and then, you know, then put it back and you're done. And although he wanted to see Lord Krishna, he could not see him very well. There is a transcendental competition of service between the Lord and his pure devotee. So the devotee offers that service that brings such pleasure to Krishna. He serves the devotees. That brings such pleasure to Krishna. Now the devotees seeing that, then they get more ecstasy. So this is the transcendental competition between the Lord and the devotees to perform that service. Okay. Chapter 75. Duryodhana humiliate. So now you get me. Bhagavatam, the variety of tastes, right? Here and Yudhishthira and all that, then killing of Shishupal, now the humiliation of Duryodhana. Pratigya, only by the grace of Lord Krishna can one fulfill all his desires and thus be freed from all anxieties. Right? What we see is that as we start to focus and be able to see the primary as the main instead of the secondary, then it appears that it's always the same thing. But it has the variety and what secondary form is being expressed through. Right? So it's always about Krishna as the center, and then ways in which you can express Krishna as the center, that devotion. Right? Chapter 75 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikshit answers Sukadeva Goswami's question 1039 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 1039, Srimad Bhagavatam 1075.1. Maharaj Parikshit asked, O Brahmana, according to what I have heard from you, all the assembled kings, sages, and demigods were delighted to see the wonderful festivities of King Ajashatru's Rajasuya sacrifice, with the sole exception of Duryodhana. Please tell me why this was so, my lord. Sukadeva Goswami answers the question in the rest of the chapter. So here he even calls him Ajashatru, means there's no enemy born for him. Means he doesn't see anyone as an enemy. And all the sages, all the kings, everybody there is satisfied. Krishna's satisfied, but Duryodhana is not. Now we know if you satisfy Krishna, everyone's satisfied, but that means that everything connected to Krishna. Right? Duryodhana is not connected to Krishna, and he doesn't want to be satisfied, so Krishna allows him to be satisfied. Because even we see as Lord Chaitanya, when he's satisfied, he's in the forest and chanting. Even all the animals come along and they start chanting and are happy. Like that, because they're not opposed to Krishna and the devotees. Right? But Duryodhana, because he's opposed, so even though Krishna's satisfied, you know, then and all the aspects of his universal form are satisfied, he still can't be satisfied because he's a Nimrod. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes the glorious conclusion of the Rajasuya sacrifice and how Prince Duryodhana was humiliated in King Yudhishthira's palace. At the time of Maharaj Yudhishthira's Rajasuya sacrifice, many of his relatives and well-wishers endeavored to please him by performing necessary services. When the sacrifice was complete, the king adorned the priest, the exalted members of the assembly, and his own relatives with fragrant sandalwood paste, flower garlands, and fine clothing. Then they all went to the banks of the Ganga to perform the ritual bathing that marks the end of the sponsor's period of initiation for the sacrifice. Before the final bathing, there was much sporting in the river, along with the male and female participants. Sprinkled with aromatic water and other liquids, Draupadi and the other ladies appeared most beautiful, their faces shining with bashful laughter. Right? Because, you know, all that energy, then that's what makes the attractiveness and all that. So, after the sacrifice, he adorns everybody very nicely, they're dressed nicely, then like that they go down to the Abhivritta Snan. And then while they're in the water, they're like that, and then after having bathed and all that, then they do the final ritualistic aspect. After the priest had executed the final rituals, the king and his queen, Srimati Draupadi, bathed in the Ganges. Then all those present who had belonged to the orders of Varnashram bathed. Yudhishthira put on new clothes and worshipped the learned Brahmanas. His family, friends, and well-wishers, each in particular manner suitable for them, and offered them all various gifts. The guests then departed for their home. But, you know, you can see as all these are separate things. Like sometimes they see as devotees think, oh, we have to do something here, but we have to do something there, and there's something. Why don't we just put it all together here? And instead of being three different offerings, it's one offering. And because it's one offering, you don't want to make it too big and make it ridiculous, so it's cut down of what the three would do. Like that. And so but here you just see as whatever is the occasion, then all these things are done. It adds to the flavor. But King Yudhishthira was so anxious about his imminent separation from those who were dear to him that he compelled several of his relatives and close friends, including Lord Krishna, to remain in Indraprastha a bit longer. King Yudhishthira's royal palace had been constructed by Maya Dhanava, who had endowed it with many wonderful features and opulences. King Duryodhana burned with envy when he saw those riches. One day, Yudhishthira was seated with Lord Krishna in his royal assembly hall, attended by his subordinates and family members. He was manifesting magnificence equal to that of Lord Indra. At that time, Duryodhana, because it's just, the devotee is unlimitedly opulent like the Lord, and so therefore to manifest magnificence that of Indra, there's not a difficult thing. They don't have to try. It's not that they have to sit there and like this and, you know, to try to get a little more energy out of it. It's just, they relax and they just do this and that's just there. At that time, Duryodhana entered the hall in a fitful mood, bewildered by the mystic craft of Maya Dhanava, right? Because if Vishvakarma had built this palace, would this pastime have happened? No, because it would have been all proper, because no illusion. But for the demons, they appreciate illusion. You know, it's part of the thing. They use illusion, they appreciate it, all these things. So therefore, illusion is built into the palace as part of the thing. So that's why it's important Maya Dhanava built the palace. Otherwise, you wouldn't have the war. Because if he wasn't insulted, then he wouldn't have had the gambling match. You wouldn't have insulted Draupadi, they wouldn't have all been killed. Right? And along with it, which is not known, is that in this whole thing, where the assembly house is, in the courtyard, he had Maya Dhanava build a pond. Very beautiful. You hear it, you know, described what the pond looked like. It was like 2 miles by 2 miles, and it had real lotuses, and then it had artificial ones made out of jewels, you know, crystals and all this and that. And swans were there. You know, fabulous arrangement. And so it's very, very nice. So Maya Dhanava wouldn't have built it there because it's against Vastu. But Krishna asked him to build it, so he did. But the fun part is that being built, then it will destroy the progeny. It'll destroy the children. Right? But it won't destroy them immediately. It will after 14 years. When did the battle happen? So he built that pawn. Like that, he's insulted, he has a gambling match, then he gets sent to the forest, and after 14 years, then what happens? Because now, who owns the palace? Duryodhana. Yudhishthira enjoyed it while he was there, then they get, you know, tossed out. So the effect doesn't go to him, it goes to who owns it. Because it's 14 years from when you build it. Yes.
Why do you say destroy the progeny?
That's just what it is. And the Brahmastan's supposed to be open and level. But if you build a pond, it's in the it goes in the ground. So it's lower. You can't have the Brahmastan lower. You can have the northeast lower, but you can't have the Brahmastan lower. So the effect of the Brahmastan being lower, it will destroy the children. So if you have a Olympic-sized swimming pool in the Brahmastan in your house, then if you have no children, you're good. But
well, what is the Brahmastan mean?
That's the very center of the Vastu Mandala. You take the Vastu Mandala and divide it, you know, by 3 by 3, so you get 9 squares. So the very center square, that's the Brahmastan. So now you're trying to think back. You know.
Vastu Mandala is
Vastu Mandala. Vastu Mandala is the measurement by which you check a house or property. If, you know, according to directions, is everything in the proper place? Mm-hmm. Like that. That's how you check. Does that make sense?
So, even for building a temple, they have these squares in every temple?
Yeah, the temple, but the temple you use 8 by 8 mm-hmm. instead of 9 by 9. So the Brahmastan's bigger because the deity goes in the Brahmastan, so then it's a much bigger place. But for everybody else, then it's 9 by 9. Bewildered by the mystic craft of Maya Dhanava, Duryodhana mistook parts of the solid floor for water and thus lifted his garment, while in one place he fell into the water, mistaking it for the solid floor. When Bhimasena, the ladies of the court, and the royal princes present saw this, right, because it was right during the court, they began to laugh. Although Maharaj Yudhishthira tried to stop them, Lord Krishna encouraged their laughter. Right, he tried to stop, and so then, you know, make it formal, but then, you know, it wouldn't have an effect. Krishna's encouraging them, you know? Because then he'll really get upset, and then we'll have the gambling match.
Lord Krishna wanted it, because this is the only time Duryodhana means laugh to others by his activity.
Oh, it means it's the only time he's ever done something that people would laugh. Oh, so you wanted to get him to get the best benefit. Okay, yeah. It's the only time he's actually pleased anybody. So. Okay, nice. Thoroughly embarrassed, Duryodhana left the assembly hall in a fury and immediately departed for Hastinapur. Right, so at least they got a good laugh at him, because otherwise you can't get anything nice out of this guy. So.
Well, it appears that many times Krishna went to Hastinapur to visit the Pandavas.
Yes, but this is Indraprastha.
I mean Indraprastha.
Indraprastha, I'm not sure if he went many times.
Okay, because it talked at the beginning of this summary. Krishna,
he was still here only, because last time Parikshit, Sukadeva Goswami is telling he is going to leave, and he introduced Duryodhana's case. Now Duryodhana's pastime is happening. It is during the Ratsaya sacrifice.
No, it's still doing that, but he's saying is that the Indraprastha was established way before the Rajasuya. Hmm. That I can't say.
No, I'm not sure. Anyway.
Yes, I'm saying. So that's why, because the point is chronology, whether it's correct or not, it doesn't matter. Because even if we say it's okay, I'm not even sure that maybe correct is that they may have been there for 11 years. But the point is that effect of that pond fructifies after 14. So they were out before it fructifies. So it's fructification. The result goes to Duryodhana, because then kicking out, taking everything from Yudhishthira means he gets that. So he gets the reactions that come also. Shloka Nisharana. Verses 1 to 30. The Avavrita celebration. 31 to 40. Duryodhana humiliated. Verses 1 to 30. The Avavrita celebration. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. King Yudhishthira was known as Ajata Shatru, or a person who has had no enemy. Therefore, when all the men, demigods, kings, sages, and saints saw the successful termination of the Rajasuya Yajna performed by King Yudhishthira, they were very happy. But that Duryodhana alone was unhappy was astonishing to Maharaj Parikit, and therefore he requested Sukadeva Goswami to explain this. Maharaj Parikit said, right, so that's the reason he couldn't understand why. Now we'll find out. Maharaj Parikit said, O Brahmana, according to what I have heard from you, all the assembled kings, sages, demigods were delighted to see the wonderful festivities of King Ajata Shatru's Rajasuya sacrifice, with the sole exception of Duryodhana. Please tell me why this was so, my lord. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, though it was already explained that the cause of Duryodhana's agitation was his sin, he asks again, wanting to know the details while describing the sacrifice. Yudhishthira did not hate Duryodhana. The cause of Duryodhana's hatred was that he thought the throne belonged to him. Parikit had heard this from the mouth of the Lord through Parampara. But he thought it belonged to him. But even he has it. He wants to be the emperor. But they only have that position of having been in the emperor because of Pandu. Right? So Bhishma established the position, right, with Shantanu. Then Bhishma maintains that. Then Pandu then does it. Now it gets handed down to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra can't maintain it at all. He can't even see, you know, that's why he's not supposed to be king. Then, even though he's being regent, a stand-in, he gets attached to the idea that why doesn't the line go down through me? My son's not flying, let him be. Rather than I got to, you know, perform this as a service. So then technically it appears that they're in the position of the empress. But technically they're not, because you have to maintain it. Then we see that you know, they try to get rid of the Pandavas, so it's just them, because otherwise they'd have to share it. And then when it doesn't really work out with the, you know, Draupadi Swayamvar and all that, it's worked out, okay, let's make an agreement. So they give him that half of the kingdom that is uninhabited. And so then Krishna has Vishwakarma arranged to build the whole city and everything there. But then he has some, you know, Maya, then later, then, well, that also comes up later. So it doesn't have to be that it was right there in the beginning. This thing with Maya, that's a later addition. It wasn't the immediate. So then he arranges the whole city and everything there, and now it becomes a wonderful place, and you see his opulence and everything. So now he's the emperor of the world by this. But Duryodhana feels it belongs to him. But he, up to now, hasn't done anything to establish himself as the emperor. He's simply riding on what's left over from Yudhishthira's father establishing the emperor position. Because we see Jarasandha was kind of like, again, because if Yudhishthira hadn't been, Jarasandha would have been. It wouldn't have been Duryodhana. It just was not happening. And if Jarasandha, it's not that Duryodhana could do anything to Jarasandha. Right? Okay. Sri Bhadarayani said, at the Rajasuya sacrifice of your saintly grandfather, his family members, bound by their love for him, engaged themselves in humble services on his behalf. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains, friends, bound by ropes of affection to the king, engaged in services at the sacrifice by their own free will. According to their liking, they did activities not under instruction by Yudhishthira. Does that make sense? So that they don't have to. It means, in other words, there's servants there that can do it. You know, junior persons, but they do it because they want to please him. So he didn't instruct them to. They just know the importance of all the things, what they can do very well. And then they take charge of doing it. Now, actually, all those assistants are there to help them. But it's still they're taking charge and doing it in that humble mood. That gives a taste. So then that's what's going on. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanatai Gaur. Yes.
Minor, small
glasses
in the afternoon,
the question. It appears that Vedic culture is a culture of ultra honesty, where somebody is tolerating to be called Duryodhan and Pralambasur and Dhenukasur. Yeah, my name is Dhenukasur. And I am Hiranyakashipu.
Yeah, no, but the bad people,
like
the bad people like bad names.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, how do you get a name like Sid Vicious?
You know? Scarface.
Yes, Scarface. I mean, how do you get these? Because they'd like it. Manu says that. So it's just the way it is.
And they get insulted everywhere, but they will never find insult in the name that they have. No, we have never heard that.
It depends who says it. Just like can a non-African American call an African American
yes.
by a locally colloquialism, but they call each other by that. Yeah, that's the way it works. So you have your name, and all the right people can call you, but others have to call you sir. You know, because who's calling him Duryodhan? It means we are here, so we know the common person's not calling him.
Oh,
he's the king. So they're calling him by the proper
Suyodhana.
Whatever. No, but they won't say that either. They'll address him as the king.
Yeah. I'm confused. Very horrible name.
Hmm?
Terrible name.
Yeah, well, that's people like that.
Name a band. Name it Beatles. Who likes Beatles? Do you want Beatles crawling around in your place?